May it please the court.
Counsel.
Adam Witowski for Tyrone Cameron, who appeals the grant of summary judgment in appellee's favor on claims related to use of force and municipal liability. It is undisputed that Officer Moonsevang released the canine Barrow with the command to bite Mr. Cameron without warning or the opportunity for Mr. Cameron to peacefully surrender. CUA clearly establishes that the failure to provide a warning and opportunity before commanding a dog to bite is objectively unreasonable, but for one rare exception. That is when a warning is not feasible due to a safety risk. The district court erred in its application of CUA, holding that because CUA had not involved a warrant for first-degree murder, it was not clearly established that giving a warning was required in these circumstances. And because Mr. Cameron had initially run, the district court found that Officer Moonsevang could assume a warning was futile and could command command K-9 Barrow to bite without allowing the opportunity to surrender. In this approach, the exception consumes the clearly established rule set by CUA. CUA is perfectly clear. A jury can find it objectively unreasonable to use a canine trained to bite and hold without giving a warning and opportunity for peaceful surrender. It says this because a warning actually diminishes the risk of harm because by increasing the chance of surrender. It states a seizure by force is a nearly foregone conclusion without a warning. It is understood in CUA that a verbal warning will not always result in a peaceful surrender. It still requires one to be given absent an immediate risk of harm. And those are exceptional cases where the Eighth Circuit has yet to find a case where the exception applies. But it only applies where a warning is not feasible. The failure of Officer Moonsevang to warn was not based on any risk posed by Mr. Cameron. We know this because minutes after the arrest, Officer Moonsevang claims to have given a warning. We know this because the situation where they found Mr. Cameron was they saw him on the roof of a house that they were there to serve a warrant on. They were around the back, many yards away from Mr. Cameron. Officer Moonsevang was in a neighboring yard behind trees when he spotted him on the roof. The other officer with him, Officer Lee, was also behind a tree in safety. They see Cameron on the roof. They announce it. They shout Tyrone. Officer Moonsevang identifies it to make sure the Officer Lee knows where Tyrone is. Tyrone comes off the roof in the front yard. They both leave cover to put themselves closer to him, running after him.
But does the danger have to be to them physically? I mean, you're suggesting that they would not have approached him if the true danger situation had occurred. They're trying to apprehend him, right?
Yes, and CUA notes that in the circumstances of CUA, where the individual was hiding, they had no idea whether he was armed or not, but he displayed some very bizarre behaviors, running from a routine traffic stop into a swamp. The court in CUA found they had the opportunity to announce when the dog had a general sense of where he was. They could have positioned themselves in a spot where they could have safely announced, we have a dog, he is trained to bite and hold, and he will be released if you don't surrender.
There was a warning given at the door, wasn't there? That we had a problem, that there may, wait a minute, let me finish, and okay. That there may be a bite possible. Is there any evidence one way or the other whether your client was close enough to hear that?
Based on the body cam footage from when we see the officers in the house make a statement, I have a hard time considering what they said to the resident of the house to be a warning, because what they said was, there's a dog coming, and it will bite someone unless you're honest with us. It was directed towards the homeowner, saying, if you're not honest with us, a dog will bite someone.
All right, whether or not that constitutes a warning, it sounds like it does to me, but is there any evidence that your client was in a position to hear that?
The evidence, when you compare, when you look at the timestamps on the video, because in the top corner of the videos, they have time of day in there. The warning was given, based on the timestamp inside the house, approximately 8 to 9 seconds before Cameron is seen by Officer Lee on the roof of the house. He had to come out a second story window and walk to the at least 3/4 of the way across the roof to the position where Officer Lee could see him. In those circumstances, I believe the record shows that it is not reasonable to think that Officer Cameron would have heard the warning, and there was no indication that Officer Muntsevang would have had any reason to know that a warning had been given. Seeing as how he was in the back, the radio was there was no it wasn't given over a radio. It wasn't enhanced in any. The warning wasn't amplified in any way. In fact, I don't think it was even stated very loudly in the house. It was directed towards the homeowner.
All right, let me change gears on you a little bit. Mm-hmm. Part of your claim is that the bite and hold for 10 to 15 seconds and use of the brake bar also constitute a violation. What makes that clearly established?
The Masters case, where it is perfectly, where the circuit, and I believe Judge Kelly wrote the decision, that an officer has to take into account changing of circumstances when it comes to the application of force. In Masters, it was held that utilizing a taser unabated for 20 seconds on someone who was attempting to comply with officer's orders was an excessive use of force. In this case, once Cameron was on the ground and the dog was biting him, he was clearly surrendering. His hands were visible. They were empty. He was complying with officer's commands. In fact, there was so little concern that Cameron was a safety risk that Officer Lee put a shotgun down in the yard a few feet away before going to put handcuffs on him. That was the only weapon visible in the area was the shotgun Officer Lee abandoned in the yard.
What about Kua? Wasn't that about a 10 to 15 second hold as well? They called it a close question, but still it was not unreasonable.
That's true, and the reason why it was reasonable for the bite to be that long in Kua is because they had found the individual hidden in 3 feet of tall grass. They had to search. They had to confirm there were no weapons within the vicinity that he had access to, and he was actively grabbing the head of the canine that was biting him, and the bite continued until he released the dog's head. But once the officer had confirmed there were no weapons in the area, and he complied with releasing the dog's head, he was verbally commanded to release. In this situation, as I mentioned, the only weapon in the area was the one that Officer Lee put on the ground. He was complying the entire time. The dog could have come off. Our position is that within about 5 seconds into the bite, a verbal order should have been given that it would have been compliant with training. His annual training states that the use of the physical removal of the dog is a failure of training. He would not have been certified had he done that in training. And that all adds into the excessive force. And I'm into my rebuttal time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Very well. Mr. Haroldson, the court will hear from you.
Thank you. I'm John Haroldson on behalf of the City of Des Moines and the named defendants in this matter. The Supreme Court has repeatedly stated that clearly established means that the cases before this court on summary judgment or district court on summary judgment have to be based on the particular facts of the case. This court, as we admit in our briefing, has, when it's had dog bite cases related to misdemeanors in searches, has indicated that a warning must be given by officers before the use of a dog. But those cases were not like this case, and the particular cases are relevant. In neither Cuha nor any succeeding case has the court stated as a bright-line rule that a warning must be given in all circumstances.
Isn't it all circumstances unless there's a serious officer safety question?
Safety to officers or others.
Okay.
And here we have a situation where, first of all, I think from the fact pattern you'll see in the videos, officers do announce that there's a dog. They command that Mr. Cameron announce himself, show himself. They say this in a rather loud voice at the bottom of the stairs. Again, this is an individual who is suspected and has an arrest warrant for involvement in first-degree homicide involving a gun, who has a violent history involving firearms, who is now found to be at a location he is not supposed to be at. They, within less than 10 seconds of when those officers announce that they are present to show himself and the dog is mentioned, he is on the roof. I think it's easy to say that Mr. Cameron likely heard this announcement. We don't have his testimony that he did.
What's the evidence?
The evidence is the nature of the timing. Within a few seconds of the officers arriving and announcing himself, he's on the roof.
Your opponent argued almost the opposite, that the few seconds indicates it's unlikely that he was in a position to hear that warning, since 8 seconds later he's jumping off the roof.
Well, the court is welcome to review the video where they announce, this is not a quiet announcement. They pound on the door, announce, they are admitted, they tell him, Ty, show yourself, and they state that a dog is present. He is, within a few seconds of that, he's on the roof. I don't believe that courts have to let common sense go by the rule, by the by, simply because we don't have him admitting that he heard the statement. The logical inference from what the moment from it said, and a few seconds later he's out on the roof, jumping and trying to escape. And I think an important fact...
Wouldn't that be a fact question for a jury, though?
Well, the court... It's a reasonable inference when you're talking about a qualified immunity case involving the use of a dog based on this court's precedent and the Graham standard, which is whether the use of force was reasonable that subsequently flowed from this. There's no doubt Mr. Cameron... We don't have Mr. Cameron saying, I was trying to avoid the police. We see him trying to avoid the police. We see him out on the roof and then jumping and running away. Well, we don't need him saying, I was trying to get away. He clearly was.
No doubt about it. He was trying to get away. But where's the officer's safety? Is there a furtive movement? Is there a reaching for a gun? Is there a gun visible? Is there anything like that that can be? In other words, why was it impractical? He jumps off the roof. Dog, you know, a warning. He doesn't react. Then you release the dog.
Right.
Instead of just an immediate release of the dog.
Well, we have a combination of factors here, both precedent, training, and the old 2020 hindsight question of Graham. We have an individual with a violent history believed by officers, reported to be believed to be armed and dangerous, who's been used the gun before, and a gun was used 5 days before this incident. He's now yards away from the officers, as Mr. Witowski stated, running. Now, it turns out he broke his leg in the fall, but they don't know this immediately. You can see on the videotape, he gets up and tries to flee. That's the point at which Officer Mensavang releases the dog with the command to bite and hold.
It seems like the key difference there is the charge of murder and the belief on the part of the officers that this man was armed. But the rest of what you've described is when officers use a dog after a warning, which is they're trying to flee, stop, or I'm going to send the dog. So it feels like what we're really working with here is the nature of the charge against Mr. Cameron and the concern about his possessing firearms, and really not a lot more. Do you disagree?
Well, I believe that is the consistent evaluation that we've had on qualified immunity and the use of force. The use of the dog is no more than any other use of force, and whether it was reasonable under the circumstances. Well, and one of the standards has always been the severity of the crime at issue.
And we look at the severity of the crime at issue, right? And there's a three-factor test that you look at. But really what I'm asking is, and I think this is where Judge Kelly is too, is you look at it and say, well, what do you have? You have He's suspicion of first-degree murder. He was armed at some point 5 days in the past. He's presumed to be armed and dangerous just because that's the nature of what happens when there are pending first-degree murder warrants out. He's found in a place where there's a protective order, so he's not supposed to be there. And so that's another factor. That's pretty much it, right? We don't have any, nobody sees a gun, nobody knows that a gun is present, there are no threats that are made, and he jumps off the roof and starts to run.
No one knows at that time whether or not there's a gun present. It's clear right. There's not a gun in his hand. A knife is later found in his pocket. But we do know that what we have here is a person who's suspected of violent crime, and importantly, with a history of violent crime and a history
of...
Yeah,
I forgot to mention that, yeah.
And he's fleeing with officers yards away into a residential district. This is a residence area. Mm-hmm. This is a condominium on the other side of the street or houses. So he is yards away from officers. And they have to try to, and they don't know at the time that he's broken his leg. And his screams of pain, I think, are clearly from the broken leg, not from the dog having his teeth on his buttock. And we have the question of whether it's usual, whether it's reasonable in those circumstances for an officer yards away from a suspect. He can't tase him. I suppose he could warn him that he'd fire his gun. But instead, he chose the non-lethal option, which is the dog.
And we have Supreme Court cases that say before you shoot him, you got to tell him we're going to shoot him.
Right, but there are exigent circumstances where that's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have an individual who is suspected of engaged in a felony murder, the most serious charge we have, into a residential neighborhood with a history of violent crime. So
how far away was he from the residential neighborhood? I mean, because when I'm... hearing from your argument is the suggestion that if it wasn't an immediate stop with the dog, he would have been in someone's yard. But was there testimony or evidence presented about sort of how far could he have gone? Let's say there was a warning and he ignored it, and then they sent out the dog. Was there testimony or evidence about how far he could have gotten had he been given the proper warning and ignored it?
There's been no statistical analysis of how far away he could have, if he had not injured himself.
Well, I don't mean a statistical analysis. I mean sort of practical on the, you know, you're talking about officers being a handful of yards away and things. So I'm talking in the same language, really. Yeah. Sort of how far away really is he? How far could he have gotten?
Well, it's a fairly typical block. So one has to assume that there are probably houses in the near vicinity. Which is another reason why the dog perhaps is a more reasonable use of force than a firearm or even a warning with a firearm, because the dog is not going to go into the, you don't have to worry about a random gunshot. And this court, since CUA, has announced that a dog use is a non-lethal option. Again, all your prior precedents, CUA, Slazewa, I think I'm butchering that name, and Adams, they all involve individuals either misdemeanors or people literally hiding. I think Adams was the most recent. That was an individual hiding under a car where there was no announcement from that officer. This is a case where there actually was an announcement, not by the dog, not by the person handling the dog. And seconds later, we have the individual suspected of a violent felony fleeing into the community with the officer yards away. If the court finds that qualified immunity doesn't apply in this circumstance, that this isn't a use, then you have to accept that essentially there's no argument ever that a canine can be used for seizure purposes from a fleeing violent felon. And I don't believe that that is what the purpose of qualified immunity, and I don't believe that's good policy, and I don't believe that's consistent with how the Supreme Court has told us to interpret qualified immunity law.
It's not use of the dog, it's the warning before the use of the dog, correct?
Right. And there are going to be obviously exigent circumstances where a warning isn't practical based upon speed. Also, there's no evidence here, based on what we saw Mr. Cameron do, that he is ever, he's trying to get away. He is not trying to be compliant. He is trying to escape being arrested for a first-degree murder charge. That is not him trying to avoid it. That is him trying to run away. Unless the court has other questions, such as the length of the time of the bite, I conclude my argument. Thank you.
Hearing none, thank you. Mr. Witoski, your rebuttal.
Thank
Thank you. To pick up on the proximity to other residences in the neighborhood, I would note that in Adams, a warning was required when the individual was hiding under a trailer in someone's backyard. At that point, it was at least a second-degree burglary case, armed burglary. It was suspected the person had a firearm and was hiding under a trailer in someone's backyard. A warning was required in that case, much closer to a residence than here than in these circumstances. I would also note that these are fact questions. As Adams makes clear, whether a safety risk is sufficient to forego giving a warning is a jury question under Adams. And I would also note that, finally, as to the Monell claim for lack of training and supervision, there is nothing in the records to establish that he had the required 16 hours of monthly training at any point in his career. And as I noted previously, had he removed the dog in the same fashion during training for certification as he did here, he would have failed his certification training. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. Court appreciates both of your arguments. Case is submitted, and we'll issue an opinion in due course.